If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
Happy New Year, everybody. Happy 2021. Have a happy and safe and prosperous New Year for all of you. I'm thinking growth. I'm thinking change. I'm thinking kick 2020 in the ass. Tell it to go away. The COVID, the isolation, pretending to live on Zoom virtually. You don't live virtually. You can't live on Zoom. I need to see people. I need to run into people and say hi and look them in the eye and shake their hand. I guess, I don't know, can I still shake your hand? Okay, the politics are the politics. We'll talk about the loss of population and the loss of confidence in our elected officials here in Illinois. And that federal investigation, Mike Madigan, continues. And we're going to see. Now, I haven't seen. I know that he doesn't have enough votes yet to become speaker again, but there's a silence. Silence among some of the progressive Democrats who aren't saying much. Yeah, I'm talking about you, Chuy Garcia, and your friends and your people in your organization that you elected with Madigan's help in the State House. Do you have to say something? Will reporters ask you whether you support Madigan or not? We'll see. But on top of the politics, there's something called life. I'm looking forward to 2021. I'm looking forward to a new puppy. If I can convince Betty, Zeus needs a friend. And I think it's time. I don't know what kind yet. Maybe a sporting breed, probably a German short-haired pointer. I love the breed. It'd be nice to have a little Zeuser running around. Betty says she wonders if I'm responsible enough. I guess we have to go through that, you know, whether I'm like a 9-year-old trying to convince her. Yeah, I'm going to be responsible. I'm 64. I don't know whether I'm ever going to be responsible. So a new puppy is one thing. A garden is another. I don't have a garden, but I'd like to have one. We'll see. And another thing, fishing. My fingers are screwed up, you know, from 40 years of typing. I've got bad carpal tunnel. The nerve endings of the fingertips have been destroyed. When I type, it's like sticks of meat hitting the keyboard. I can still do that. But tying a fishing line, I don't know. Tying a thin bit of leader with a popper on the end of it to some fishing line and tossing that, flicking that popper into a pond right by the weeds in June, and letting the ripples disappear, waiting a good long minute, not moving it, and then just giving it a little pop, a little snick. Wait, and a little pop, and see what comes boiling out of that water. Yeah, these are the dreams that you dream in January and February. We'll talk politics, though. Jeff Carlin is here. Jeff is executive producer at WGN Radio and the long-running co-host and my friend of this podcast. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, columnist at the Chicago Tribune, still, member of the editorial board of that great newspaper, still. And I don't plan on leaving. I guess you're going to have to, if they want me to go, they're going to have to put a pillow over my head or pry my cold, dead fingers from that keyboard. But I'm not going anywhere. And where are you? With the politicians saying nothing about what you care about? and the news all kind of partisan and obviously tribal. There's still life ahead of you and me. And so I think we just take a trip right now to see what's up on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
Every week I get letters, emails from readers who love the Chicago Way podcast. And I tell you, for Jeff and myself, that those letters and notes are very much appreciated. If you like what you hear, you know what to do. Subscribe free on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your free podcasts. And make note that if you do it on iTunes, you can give us a stellar 5-star review. And if you do that, you know, who knows, maybe we can give you a bribe the Chicago Way, as long as I pass that through the United States Attorney's Office to see if they'll approve it. Given that there's so much going on with the U.S. Attorney's Office, Jeff Carlin, why don't we start, since all politics is local, let's go local first, all right? Oh,
the Chicago Way.
There you go.
Who's asking? Yeah, if we get that 5-star reveal, we might be able to get them a handle on some convenient asphalt.
Convenient asphalt, or maybe a contract. Maybe we could appeal for a new Olympic venue, and then my kids can get some deal with the pension union, you know, the unions, and get pension money. And do land speculation before the Olympics. Oh,
dun dun dun!
Yeah, that was already thought about, and no one gave two figs about it, except maybe me and the editorial board and a few others. No one cared about it. Now you see it writ large. That Chicago Way deal is writ large in Washington, with Hunter Biden chasing after his dad, making millions of dollars because he's just such a genius in business. From the Chinese, I guess. But Jeff, I promised, let's go local first. So let's go local. How's Lori Lightfoot doing, Jeff?
Yeah, I don't as we tape this, we're in, what is this, day 100, 200? I don't even know. Well beyond the pale of her second year, and it's not going well, I'd say.
What seems to be the problem here?
Well, I mean, from my point of view, as you know, somebody who's covering media and is, you know, has to cover it for news purposes, she has a tendency to just jump out on at moments that you don't think she would. And she clearly doesn't have all the information, and it goes downhill from there. Starting as far back as when all the COVID stuff and the pandemic stuff happened, with the "do not go out, I'm shutting everything down, you got to be responsible, this is all about each other." And then
you don't need to get your roots done, and they all loved her for it. The right. Today Show, all the woke media loved her, and you know, I like her too. Okay, and so do you.
Absolutely.
But they were going crazy, like treating her like, you know, like the way now they're treating Andrew Cuomo, governor of New York, even though he sent sick people back into the nursing homes to create thousands of deaths. But that doesn't matter, because his politics are woke and he's woke with them. And Lori Lightfoot had that same advantage, right, Jeff? She was woke, and she's talking about identity politics and liberal cant. But then came Anjanette Young.
Well, I mean, we're also jumping past, because this is our final episode of the year, so we're kind of recapping what's happened so far. and kind of looking ahead. Right. So you jumped over the census debacle this summer, where the mayor used the song of the summer, which was Old Time Road, and had the Dreadhead Cowboy, who, for those of you who don't know, is a he lives south suburbs, a guy who has horses and rides them throughout the south and west sides, and, you know, is kind of an icon of protests against police or political actions.
Yeah, because he showed up in all those anti-police protests and became a darling, which is why she chose him.
Right. And people like him. He's genuinely, seemingly a nice guy, yada, yada, yada. Anyway, she sends him into the breach as a census cowboy, dresses him up, rolls him out to Old Time Road.
She wore the hat. Didn't she wear some ridiculous hat?
I'm calling out the census cowboy. If you see the census cowboy coming to your neighborhood, that's not a good thing. That means you got to step up and do your part and make sure that you fill out the census.
She gets, all behind him. I mean, again, she has this idea, this mentality where she's, you know, she's a prosecutor, so it's very much, I'm telling you how to be, and she's very, you know, without calling her a dictator, she's dictatorial in her sense that she's very aggressive and looming larger than she is, right? There are all those memes about cutouts of her all over the city of Chicago, blocking access to all sorts of things. People were mocking her, but she was leaning into it and having fun with it. Fine. But the Dreadhead Cowboy thing got me, because the guy, she didn't do a background check on this guy, apparently. And a few months later, he's picked up on the Ryan during a protest and apparently had not been taking care of his horses, both of which have now been taken away from him and given over to somebody else.
So he basically, what he did was, if you recall, he galloped or loped the horse. I don't think right, that horse really could get into a high gallop, but it was just a chunky trail horse that had seen better days. And that horse, he destroyed its feet, running it hard on
the Ryan, which I wouldn't want to drive my car on the Ryan. So I don't understand that to begin with, but yeah. And so I absolutely saw the coverage. It went national.
And that's what people remembered, that he was there was animal cruelty involved. So in the pecking order of, like, social faux pas, right. You know, you don't spank your dog. You'd rather get bit by the pug, like I was on the porch of the 3-flat, rather than spank it and be on a video, right, where your career's over. And he was cruel to the...
Right. And so, yep. And so, again, I mean, and all that aside, but it was just another example of this idea where, you know, they just, she's just not really thinking through what she's doing. And now we flash forward to the engine at Young situation.
Oh, you're skipping one since you called me unskipping.
Oh, sorry, John. What did I miss?
I still haven't found out what happened. I remember she, after the second or third or fourth wave of looting and rioting that she didn't do anything about, which is causing a lot of people to leave the city.
Right.
Now, anyway, there was the issue of the Bobby Rush popcorn scandal, where she accused, and Bobby Rush, the famous former alderman and do-nothing congressman of the South Side, accused the cops who were in his office of eating his popcorn.
Profound disrespect. Turns out that the office was an office being used by leased by Bobby Rush, and the leasing company had a call of a break-in, because that's how it works, and they called the police, and the police got there and saw that it was a congressman's office, and they set up camp to protect it at the behest of the leasing group. And they were called to be there. They were asked to be there. They were supposed to be there. So this whole mentality that her calling a press conference, a specialty press conference, like a last second press conference,
to beat up on the cops who were, like,
right, the cops, had these
cops, most of them white cops, some of them sleeping. They'd been working like 18-hour days.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
and they were told to stay there, and they stayed there.
Right.
Some guys laid out.
Yeah, their decorum was less than exceptional.
Well, whatever they were, they were exhausted cops dealing with rioting and looting. and then some of them took a nap. I don't begrudge them, but my problem is Lori used it as a club to beat them up. What this illustrated and foreshadowed about Lori Lightfoot as the year progressed and blew up into the Enginette Young was that in the great Bobby Rush popcorn scandal, she had all these cops in front of her where they were all pounding on the blue shirts. The one person that was not in the room in her news conference was the commander of the 2nd District or the watch commander on duty. None of them. So that tells you that the bosses who told these cops where to go understood that they'd given orders, and she was just papering it over as a symbolic device to beat up cops when they were at their most exhausted, when the people needed them to keep order.
And a quick note on that too is that was also the time when Catanzara, the FOP lodge president, was lambasting the mayor for the way looting organizations and way they were right prepared for it, and she needed a win at that point. You know, she needed a bright, shiny object to distract with. And that was part of it, was that the police, you know, union president was ruffling her feathers. And as we'll see, you know, you and I will talk about here in a minute with the Enginette Young thing, it goes back to this idea, John, that I don't think Lightfoot's a very good sparring partner, if you will, in the sense that I don't think she can take a body blow and not unleash a fury of swings. You know, she's not measured enough to say, to take, absorb something like a Catanzara being, you know, a mouthpiece for whatever he wants to say, because that's his job. She's got to respond to it. She's got to say something. She can't hold back. And if she took body blows, she'd be able to see the forest for the trees and be able to come out swinging when she needed to come out swinging at the right time. But she doesn't do that.
So I guess, are you saying that the mayor of Chicago is Donald Trump's spiritual sister?
I've been saying that forever since even before the infamous FU situation this year, which we also just glazed over, where the mayor told the president to FU. What world are we living in where that's even – I mean, if you're on the phone with him and it's just the two of you, sure, go for it. Or if you're if you're in a steam room naked with someone, yeah, go for it. Swear at him. That's fine. But on national TV to go out of your way to say it? No. Not my mayor.
It's just about cover. It's really whether you agree with her assessment of the president or the soon-to-be former president or not. The issue is how she responds in crisis, right?
Right.
And I find it not. I kept warning her and warning her, and I've kept waiting for the mayor and the governor and Tony Preckwinkle, the Cook County Board Commissioner, to give people a reason to stay in Illinois. Right now we have 240 some thousand people who've left Illinois, Jeff, over the past 10 years, 80,000 in the last year. It's a national story. Illinois is shrinking. The best and the brightest are leaving. The people who can leave are leaving. And what is left? Rising crime, carjacking, homicides. 4,000 people shot this year compared to 2,600 or so shot in 2019 or 2018. And then you have more than 700 homicides. You have 138% increase in carjacking, and nothing from the mayor or nothing from State's Attorney Kim Fox, who benefited from Lori Lightfoot's support.
Right. Absolutely. And it's I understand the pandemic's been an issue and there's been a lot to manage, fine. And, you know, the bureaucracy in this city and town and the state is awful and nothing gets done quickly and it makes everything harder because, you know, we've wasted all this money when we should have been investing on I don't know, computer systems, development systems, ways to run our government more effectively and efficiently, but we haven't done that. We see nothing from them. We see nothing, no sort of task force, like you said, no sort of, you know, a way to attack this problem. And people say, oh, well, that's such a big problem. How do they start? Where do they begin? You know, what are they going to do? They can't put out all the fires at once. Well, if you want to narrow it down to just to say one specific fire, you could say you could look at like the almost 100% increase in shootings on expressways in the city, which is a very small geographic area you could focus on. You could come out and hold a whole press conference on that and announce a task force or some sort of system, or on the carjackings, because you know we know generally where a lot of those happen. And none of that. There's not even an attempt to piecemeal stem the violence that's going on in the city, let alone the burning of buildings in your economic engine. I mean, none of that has materialized. There's been no plan. There's been a reactionary, well, in case things get out of control again, we've got a plan for how we're going to react to it, or we're going to be ready to react to it. Okay, but that's
the Jeff. The problem is that her response and most of the Democratic Party's response has been Trump sucks.
Right.
Trump is terrible, and therefore everything's terrible. Don't get on my case about other stuff when I have Trump to worry about.
Exactly.
Okay, but here's the problem. Most people aren't really that political. They want their garbage picked up in the city. They don't want to get taxed, broken by property taxes, and they don't want to get shot outside their house when they're going to get their car, okay? In 2019, according to the Tribune, there were 2,635 shootings. In 2020, there were 4,049 shootings. Are you going to tell me that Trump is responsible for that? We know about the man, Shui Guan, 33 years old, lived on Union in Bridgeport. He was carjacked, victim, shot to death. Four-year-old son. And then you have stories about, you know, I looked at stories while I was off. The police are warning people in Lincoln Park and elsewhere near North that there's a wave of crime and robberies and et cetera, carjackings going on. It's not just on the South and West sides. Where's the mayor, man? And where's the media demanding? I mean, I can see that, you know, there was a time when there were other mayors, the people, this would happen, an increase from 2,600 to 4,000 shootings, and the mayor's not being held to account by the press corps? What, do I have to be the skunk at the damn garden party every day? I kind of like her, but this is driving me crazy.
I know. And tragically, she's then probably partially by design. She's got a pass because of the pandemic and these limited, you and I have talked about this, these limited scrums, if you will, these virtual press conferences where she's got one person she can talk around or ignore or asking someone peckishly for somebody else. It's just, she's got it easy right now in that regard. I mean, she doesn't have to. Really doesn't have to answer it. And to be fair, you've got guys like, you know, there are plenty of reporters who keep asking about the carjacking thing and pressing.
Oh, really? Who? Besides Marianne Ahern? Who?
Wow. Marianne Ahern has pressed him on it. I mean, Ben Bradley's did a whole bunch of stuff focusing on
it. All right, good. I'll give a hat tip to those two. And you mentioned the expressway shootings. That's the job of, you know, the governor is in charge of the expressways.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
When people are getting shot on the expressway.
But it's not people from Peoria or Kankakee or people from downstate who are doing these expressway shootings. They're Chicagoans.
They're coming from Naperville, okay? And they're getting people on the way to and from work or downtown from Naperville or wherever, the suburbs, have to run a gauntlet where they might get shot. I mean, are you kidding me? What is going on here? So all this together, think of all this together, the problems, I've always argued that we reap what we sow, and We've had like 70 years or so of liberal democratic politics. The last time a Republican was the mayor of Chicago, it was Al Capone's guy.
Right.
So it's always been politically corrupt. It's politically corrupt now in the sense, I don't know about contracts, but in the sense there is a corruption when you have average people getting, just normal Chicagoans being subject to horrific violence. And what is the response? Oh, Trump. Oh, identity politics. Oh, I stand with women of color. Really? Well, the women of color are getting hijacked.
There's been nothing on that either. And it's such a thing where if you're going to, you're looking for wins, you're looking for things you can do that, you know, at least aren't just lip service. These are things you can do. And like you said, it's every time it's Madam Mayor, can we, what do you think about the shootings? Mr. Governor, what do you think about the violence? Well, you know, it's a problem that we all have to face, and it's a big problem. But did you hear about the guy in D.C.? He sure won't give us any help with the COVID.
He's got orange hair, and he said mean things.
Right. Yeah,
right. But I mean, I've just about had it with them.
Fix your own house.
Right, right. And now we come to, after all this, the Bobby Rush popcorn, the getting your roots done, telling everyone not to. The riots, the looting twice, again and again, and not stopping. People leaving. The homicides are up dramatically, and so are the shootings. Up like twice as many. 4,000, okay, in 1 year. And all that, and then we get to your story on Jeanette Young. Tell us about this one.
Well, you and I think you and I hashed this out last week a little bit.
Right, but it keeps morphing on her.
It does keep morphing on her. So, quick recap. Before Mayor Lightfoot was mayor, there was an incident involving a execution of a warrant on a woman, and there was a tip. Police went in. They had the wrong house. They, you know, went in this house for 40 minutes. Woman was not the right, not a suspect in it by any means, and was on body camera naked and crying and very upset. And it became a whole thing at the time that they're like, oops, sorry, we'll fix your door. Well, her lawyer petitioned the city to get the body cam videos, and the legal department fought it. Flash forward, the legal department under Mayor Lightfoot is fighting it. That's ongoing. And then it gets wind to...
She was telling people she didn't know anything about it.
Right.
And then we know, then due to reporting, we know, and again, more emails came out just the other day, right before New Year's, that initially she had only learned of the February 2019 raid earlier in the month right. of December. And then it comes out, oh, no, her staff and she had discussed this on emails in November of 2019.
Yep.
So what is that? L-I-E, right. And, lie?
And, you know, her slim defense is that she didn't see the video. That's what she was saying. I didn't see it. Sounds like exactly. Ron. It sounded just like Ron. And bringing it to the cherry on top of the sundae that is the Chicago Way and Lori Lightfoot is that she tore into a couple of reporters, including one of your colleagues at the Tribune, about asking her, "Oh, you knew about this. Why didn't you do anything?" And she said, "I didn't know about it." Well, she didn't know about it. And either she forgot or she lied, or so she's either forgetful or she's a liar. And she took him
Wait
to task.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, John.
Wait a minute. Let's not get all, snowflakey about this. Getting yelled at by mayors
right.
of Chicago or governors is something I know a little bit about, okay? And I've had them, you know, I remember they would start sweating and look like some little killer doll with a knife, you know, like Chucky. So they do have a right
Certainly.
To get upset.
They're people, they're human beings. They're not machines.
But the part that's bothersome is She then tries to rescue herself by, she says, oh, let's put together a meeting. I'm going to have a meeting with this victim, and I'll, you know, I could play identity politics, and all women of color. It could have been me, she said, Lori Lightfoot. And then what happened was she lost control of that because her lawyer said, okay, yeah, you can meet with her, but then you're going to have to stand in with her at a struggle session, just like the Communist Party of China, in front of the city council, and stand up there while you let the people, and if this is possible, farther to the left than Lori Lightfoot. There are some. There's about five or six aldermen who consider themselves socialists, 100%, and they were going to beat it up, and Lori Lightfoot said no. She withdrew. So here's the problem to me, and here's the problem for everybody in Chicago. This is the thing that's telling people, get out, leave. She won't deal with the crime, because if she deals with the crime, she's going to have to come up against Kim Fox, who she endorsed for Cook County State's Attorney. If she comes up against crime, she's going to be accused by the people farther to her left of being antithetical.
Part of the industrial criminal engagement apparatus.
And then, God forbid, somebody brings up George Soros, because then it's...
Well, that's a story this year, John. We've kind of pounded on the mayor for a while here, so I think we should probably segue.
Yeah, okay, switch.
Yeah, pound on you.
Pound on me now. Go ahead.
You racist, bigoted jerk, you. I'm sorry, I'm paraphrasing the Tribune Guild emails. Yeah, what a thing, John. I can't believe that was a thing, and that has been buried by, I know, not to you, because it really sucks, and I can't imagine trying to live through something like that or dealing with something like that. But the story is, and everyone knows it. I mean, anybody listening to this podcast, I hope, knows it. You know, John draws the line that many others have drawn and is completely apparent between Soros and campaigns for emptying jails and lightening sentences and reducing or eliminating bails. And there's fact and proof there. And you, of all people, were dragged into the street metaphorically, tarred and feathered for being a racist.
I was defamed as a religious bigot, even though I did not mention George Soros's religion. I don't care about it. By my own colleagues, because they didn't like my politics and they wanted me off page two, and they got what they wanted. Oddly enough, the same story that what I had written was not new. It was covered in detail in the New York Times, the Huffington Post, Washington Post, Philadelphia Inquirer, on and on about all these different liberal, far left, soft on crime prosecutors supported by George Soros. So my union, or not my union, because I'm not a member, they went after me and it got leaked to the usual suspects, the hard left bloggers. I think even Ayers and Klomsky and others attacked it. And crickets. Crickets, some media people reported it. They didn't even give me the benefit of the doubt. They just reported what the slur, right? The defamation of character, and waited for my response.
Yeah.
I expected more from certain media writers.
Locally, I expected more. I mean, there were plenty of people on the national stage who supported you and took this as being what it was, is just, you know, heresy and hypocrisy.
Personally, it still hurts. And
yeah, I can't. Like,
I haven't even decided. I'm told there I have legal options. I didn't know that. And I'm not. I don't know what to do. I'm going to wait. But the thing is, I felt like leaving and quitting.
Yeah, I know you and I had a, you know, I mean, it sucked because you and I weren't able to talk, connect on this a whole lot at the time. I mean, we did, but I was also same time dealing with the death of my mom. And so the conversations you and I had, and I don't stop me, John, if this is too much, but that's a John cast that was heartbroken and defeated. And I'd never heard that cast before. And it broke my heart.
It was just, it hurt me because my colleagues,
right.
What hurt me, besides being defamed as a religious bigot, it was not true, was that I loved the Chicago Tribune. And what I kept seeing in the subsequent analyses written by, you know, Carl Cannon, Real Clear Politics, Charles Lipson, a friend of ours, and other people throughout across the nation, was lumping the Chicago Tribune newsroom into the same category of the New York Times newsroom and the woke warriors who impose ideological tests upon writing. And they have no concept, or they did not understand that they were hurting the Chicago Tribune that I love. Because if you're seen as a ideologue, as a news reporter, not as a op-ed writer, you know, columnists are opinions. I understand that. But if the newsroom is seen as pushing a particular ideology, it's seriously damaging. As you can see, the New York Times shutting down Tom Cotton's op-ed and demanding the firing and the eventual firing of the op-ed editor. It's not that I agree with Tom Cotton. The piece was about sending American troops into the cities that were being torn up by the riots. I disagree vehemently with that and said so. What bothers me is that that's someone's opinion, and we're going to say what opinions are valid and not valid, which ones will allow and not allow, is not about liberty. So on many different levels, this whole thing that happened to me was upsetting. And leaves a bad taste. Tell you the truth, Jeff, the reason why I didn't just plug and say, screw it, F you, and leave, was because I think about the readers and the listeners here and the readers, and I just wasn't going to give them the satisfaction of cancel culturing another person that they disagree with. I just wasn't going to allow it. So that's why.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Jeff, I tell you, it has changed my views of a lot of things. I feel, except for the listeners here and my readers, and a very isolated few people, it's rather lonely. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, jeez. I can't even, like I said, I felt, it was, like I said, it's a different John. You know, I can see a post and a pre on this situation. And I mean, I can already hear the trolls on the internet, you know, oh, John's whining about being picked on. Oh, God.
But they do it. You know what's interesting about that whole, and not just to me, but just generally, the internet trolls are all about, at least in my experience, the ones on the left, they're about demeaning and intimidating anyone who might like, quotes around it, like what you write. And that's about bullying to keep you away, to make you afraid. To make you afraid to say, I agree with this or I disagree with this. They want silence. And that's not liberty, Jeff. I don't care what it's called, but it's not liberty. And the fact that the hard left plays that game in this town, which is really hard left, hurts the people because we've talked about it. The crime, the hard carjackings, all this different stuff that you can't talk about without fear of being accused of what? Unwokeness. And who gets hurt? The politicians benefit because no one's questioning them, or few are, but the people. So what do the people do? They just leave, man. They just say, hey, I'm done. And that's what you see. They don't hold news conferences. 240,000 people gone in 10 years, 79,000 in the last year. Why? They're just saying, to hell with you, I'm out of here.
Absolutely. I mean, I on a personal end, I, you know, my brother took that route a couple of years ago, and it wasn't necessarily because of, you know, the political piece in his mind, but, you know, people vote with their dollars more than their electronic button pushing, whatever, however we were doing it by mail or whatever.
We're going to see in the years to come. That what happened in the New York Times, shutting down Tom Cotton's piece, even the one I disagreed with. You're going to see, and that whole the whole business with the Twitter shutting down the New York Post discussion of the Hunter Biden story, and big tech coming to Biden's rescue, and this melding between big tech, corporate media, and the Democratic Party. You're going to see, I don't think it's going to be good. You're going to see more and more people isolated from the public discussion. And that's really never a good prospect for future growth.
Yeah, absolutely. And it all goes back to the idea that we all get all of our information from the internet and not papers and not real journalists and not people who are, you know, in the room asking the tough questions when they are.
And not all, right? There are many, many, many throughout the country, journalists at the Tribune and elsewhere, and Sun-Times and on TV and radio broadcast, who go into the difficult stories and talk to people that don't want to talk, and at great risk to themselves and to their careers, and they pursue what they think are important stories. And my hat tip to them always. But when you have, at the same time, a group like here, like group the union, and others in other newsrooms, like the New York Times, and many others, just not two, who see themselves as, I don't know, inquisitors to find heretics. You see, they cease to become journalists and become political operatives, whether they understand it or not. Can we end on a happy note instead of talking about? I mean, what you're looking for? We're looking forward to certain things that are going to happen, like I don't know, a new relationship with China. President Kamala Harris. What are we going to see?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if either of those things are subjective in their your view of them. So I don't know if it's positive news or negative news, depending on who's asking.
How about this? The coronavirus vaccine is here.
Yeah, multiple vaccines are here.
And we're going to get rid of this thing. I'm going to let the historians write about it, you know, when they figure out how we lost our liberty as a result of fear. But
right. Exactly.
But I think that's going away.
Yeah, that's something to look forward to. There might be an Olympics this year coming up. It was supposed to happen last year. I always enjoy the Olympics.
I just can't wait to, you know, see Jeff and Christine, Betty and John.
That's the biggest
thing. Go to Valari, sit out there and have dinner, and then take a walk, and hopefully not get
carjacked or stabbed or robbed. Right,
exactly. Which is
maybe we'll come to my neck of the woods.
Maybe we'll do it. Maybe we'll go to Naperville. It might be safer there.
Well, we got to get there, and that'll take the Ryan. So maybe not.
The Express? No, it's the Eisenhower.
Oh,
shooting on the Eisenhower just the other day. It would be nice, though, to actually have interactions with random people.
Oh, yeah. I miss that, too. I'm always one of those. It's like the old Irish saying is that you meet a new friend every day, you know, and strangers are friends you've never met.
Right.
And so I always try to do it on the bus. I miss riding the bus because you meet people on the bus. I miss riding, you know, elevators with people or sitting people in the lobby or what have you.
What did Americans do and how do they have interactions without interacting? I guess they do it virtually, right?
Right.
Zoom, that's lame.
I know, and all these declarations of like the word of the year, and they're all, you know, pandemic and virus and vaccine and blah, blah, blah. Virtual. Virtual is the word of the year. I don't care. You can fight me on it all you want. It's the word of the year, and it sucks.
It sucks, and you know what sucks the worst? I had a life. So did you, okay? I know I'm not ready to give it up, and neither are you. But you know who really gets hurt in all this? The kids. The kids who are isolated, and the kids who are the poorest and kids, the most at-risk kids in the urban areas, the kids that politicians say they really care about, which they don't, because if they did, they'd have had these schools open, but they caved to the unions. I know that'll get all the social justice warriors upset. But you know what's odd? Their kids, all these politicians are sending their kids to private school where the private schools have been open. And for the poorest, the kids at risk, they've dealt with the substandard school system, and now they have substandard Zoom school. It's ridiculous. Oh, yeah. And nobody, oh, my God, don't say anything because Trump. Don't say anything because they'll call you a Republican. Don't say anything because conservative, in some of their minds, equals brown shirts. Don't say anything because you might aggravate the Karens. Well, you know what, Jeff? I think it's time to start saying stuff. That's me. Happy New Year, everybody, and look forward to this wonderful COVID-free new year of liberty, justice for all, and the American way. For Jeff Carlin, executive producer at WGN Radio, and for me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist still at the Chicago Tribune, member of its editorial board. Have a happy and healthy new year, and don't forget, you can't have dibs if you can drive over the snow. The dibs-itution is clear. There's no dibs if the snow is only 3 or 4 inches deep. If you can drive over it, dibs doesn't apply. Judge Dibs has spoken. See you next time.